ברוכים הבאים רבותיי, תזכו לשנים רבות, נעימות וטובות. Welcome to a special edition of our Wednesday night class, this being the Wednesday night before the holiday of Shavuot. Tonight I just like to make one point that I think is vital in preparation for the holiday of Shavuot, and I think will put us on the right frame of mind in order to take the proper messages out of the holiday and get what we're supposed to get out of it. One of the highlights of Shavuot is the fact that we read Megillat Rut. I don't know if you're all familiar with the story of Megillat Rut. I'll explain it to you quickly, a quick overview of the story, which is quite interesting. We read a story of a lady called Naomi, who was married to a fellow called Elimelech. They had two sons, Mahlon and Kilion. Not the most common names. And Mahlon and Kilion married two ladies called Ruth and Orpah. Elimelech died. Mahlon and Kilion died. So it ends up you have Naomi and her two daughters-in-law that remain. According to some opinions, Ruth and Orpah were goyot. They weren't Jewish. It means Mahlon and Kilion married out of the faith. Naomi was a righteous lady. So she was left with two daughters-in-law that were goyot, destitute, poverty-stricken. She didn't have a penny to her name. They were living outside of Israel. Naomi decides to go back to Israel and live her life out, at least in the Holy Land. And she tries to dissuade her daughters-in-law from coming back with her. Just go back to your family. They came from a prestigious royal family from Moab. And eventually she's able to dissuade one of them. Orpah decides to go back. Orpah goes down in history as a famous lady, being the grandmother of Goliath, as we know him, Goliath. That's Orpah's claim to fame. Ruth, however, was a little more stubborn, and she stuck it out, and she ends up converting to Judaism. She goes back with Naomi, and could you believe it, she ends up marrying the chief rabbi. She ends up marrying the greatest rabbi of the generation, a man by the name of Boaz. And the Megillah goes on to say how she had a child from Boaz. Boaz actually died the next day. So they were only married for a few hours. He died the next day, but the seed is there. The lineage is there. And from that child, another child was born, and so on and so forth. And the Megillah tells us exactly the name of the father, the name of the son, and then the grandson, and the great-grandson. Eventually, to a man called Yishai, who had a son called David, which is David HaMelech. And then continues on to Shlomo, and eventually the Mashiach himself comes from that lineage of the convertis root. Married to Boaz. That's basically the story. Very interesting story. Dramatic. I'm leaving out all the gravy in between. What happened, how they came, how they went, and the whole story, how it evolved. But let it suffice for now that that's the story. Amar Rav Zeira. Rav Zeira said, for what purpose was this story written and put as part of the 24 books of Tanakh? Don't get me wrong, it's a great story. But there's no halachot that we learn from this story. It's not a story that you can learn lessons from law. Tum'ah, tahara, isur, heter, halachot. So Rav Zeira says, why did the author of Megillat Rut write the book? And then why was it inserted in one of the 24 books of Tanakh? What's so special about Megillat Rut? Anybody know the author of Megillat Rut? All right, for $5,000, does anybody know the author of Megillah Rut? Okay, very good. Shmuel HaNavi. How do you like that? Shmuel HaNavi wrote Megillah Rut. Very important to know that, as we'll see. And then we may ask a question, what in the world does Megillah Rut have to do with Shavuot? Why make that the highlight of the reading of the holiday? Based on these questions, we really must go back in history to the times of Shaul HaMelech, King Saul. Shaul HaMelech was looking for a volunteer to kill Goliath. And David volunteered. Shaul was a little shocked. David didn't have the visible strength that Shaul felt was needed to overcome this giant. Well, David was committed. So Shaul took off his armor and started to place it on David. And he noticed that while the armor of Shaul was very large, somehow it fit David perfectly. Shaul started to get a little concerned. He knew that his kingship was in jeopardy. He knew already that his kingship was timed. He was going to lose it. And now the armor fit David perfect. So he suspected that maybe David is a candidate not only to kill Goliath, but maybe to eventually take the throne, follow in being king of Israel. So it says Shaul asked a question. Shaul says to his general, anybody know the general of Shaul? Unbelievable. Can't give away a dollar tonight. Abner ben Ner. Oh yeah. Everybody knows it after the answer. Right. In any event, right, let's ask it easy. Does anybody know my name for a quarter? Now, Abner ben Ner is the general of Shaul. So Shaul turns to his general and says, Ben Mizeh Na'ar. Who's this boy's father? What's the question? We know David's father. David's David ben Yishai. And it's obvious that Shaul knew that because the Navi tells us Yishai used to be one of the princes that worked for Shaul. So it's a funny question. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, Shaul says, Minu had that. Who's his father? The Gemara in Yebamot says he was asking a much deeper question. He says, I know his father's Yishai. And I know that David comes from Yehuda tribe, which is the tribe that's the tribe of kings. But Yehuda had two sons. One son was called Peretz, and one son was called Zerah. He says, I want to know which dynasty does he come from. From the Peretz dynasty? Because if he comes from that dynasty, the Peretz dynasty is the kings. If he comes from Zerah dynasty, they're only princes. So he was really checking up his lineage to see if indeed he was worthy to be the king. And the answer that he got was, after he said, Ben Mizeh Hanar, Abner told him, yeah, he's Peretz goods, which means he's worthy to be the king. In the interim, came in a fellow called Doeg. Doeg HaAdumi. He was also a big rabbi. They were all big rabbis. Shaul's a big rabbi. Abner is Gadol BaTorah. And Doeg also is Shaul's rabbi. So you have three heavy hitters over here discussing halakha. Doeg walks in and says, Rabotai, Mechila. And I don't know if he said it that cordial either. But he says something to the effect, I see you gentlemen are discussing David's qualifications of king. But before you discuss his qualifications of king, he might not even have qualifications to marry into the Jewish people. Forget about king. He was trying to tell them, you're ahead of yourselves. You're already discussing king. Yeah, Peretz said, oh, he might not be Jewish enough to even marry a Jewish lady. Oh, he threw a bomb. I said, why? He said, because his grandmother's Ruth. And the Torah tells us, clear pasuk in the Torah, Lo yavo amoni u'mo'abi bekal Adonai. We are not allowed to accept in marriage a convert from Amon and a convert from Moab. So Doeg comes along and says, hey, Ruth's conversion is fine, but she wasn't allowed to marry Boaz. Boaz made a mistake. That's an illegitimate marriage over there. So all the offspring of that are illegitimate. So forget it. David's got a stain on his family tree there. Forget about king. Abner is not intimidated. Abner comes right back and he says, Mechila, you're making a mistake, Doeg. We have a teaching. Pay attention. We have a teaching from our rabbis. In the yeshiva, it was taught that when the Torah says we cannot marry Moavi people, it means the men. Moavi velo Moavit. Or Moavi velo Moaviya. The men are the problem. Ladies are okay. Oh really, says Torah. He says, based on your logic, when the Torah says that we are not allowed to marry a mamzer, everybody know what a mamzer is? Okay, it's a rhetorical question, but I assume that you know what a mamzer is. It's a result of a illicit relationship. The child that is born from an illicit relationship, in certain cases, is a mamzer. A terrible thing. In English, there's a word for that also, but out of respect for the Kahal, I will not say it. It starts with a B. Go to Israel. Call an Israeli a mamzer, see what he does to you. Bad, bad. The terminology is a bad terminology. And the Torah says, Lo yavom mamzer bekal Hashem. So Doeg says, according to your logic, mamzer it should be permissible. Because for some reason you exclude ladies from these things. Just like you excluded Moabiyah, so excludes mamzer it also. And the Torah also tells us that if an Egyptian person converts, we cannot accept it for three generations. The Torah says, Lo yavo mitzri. Are you going to say mitzri velo mitzrit? Actually, it was a solid question that Doeg asked. So, Avner is not intimidated again. He comes back. He says, no, there's a difference. He says, why are we punishing Moab? What did they do wrong? This is when the Jewish people were coming out of Egypt. We crossed by their country. And we were thirsty and we were hungry. Actually, we weren't thirsty and hungry, to be honest with you. Because we had the man that fell every day and we had the well that was following us with water. But Moab didn't know that. So we asked Moab for some water, for some food. We were willing to pay for it. And you know what the people of Moab said? Die. I'm not giving you anything. They were willing to watch a whole nation starve and dehydrate themselves to death, and he did not even offer to sell us provisions. God says, such cruelty. These people, they can convert, but we have nothing to do with such cruelty. They cannot marry into our people. So Abner says, listen, it's not proper for ladies to come out and provide provisions to a nation. The men's responsibility. Therefore, the men are punished for not coming out to greet us, but the ladies are okay. That's Avner's comeback. Doeg is relentless. Doeg comes back, says, I'm sorry, you're wrong. I agree it's not proper for ladies maybe to go out and provide provisions to men, but they should have went out to provide provisions to the ladies. Men to the men, ladies to the ladies.
So their cruelty was to the ladies. They're just as guilty. Therefore, the ladies are forbidden. Ruth is out. David is not kosher. Avner had no comeback. He said, we better take this conversation to the yeshiva for further discussion. They moved the conversation to the yeshiva where the hakamim were. And Doeg said his arguments, and Avner says his arguments, and the yeshiva really saw Doeg's argument to be legitimate, and they were about to make an announcement. They were about to put up a sign, Rabotai, David is illegitimate. Nobody can marry him. Pasul. Imagine that. You can't imagine. David Melech Yisrael, you figured, you know, what an easy life, what an enjoyable thing. And meanwhile, his whole existence was mired in controversy. Well, the story gets more exciting. Came in a rabbi called Amasa ben Yeter. All this is, by the way, in the Gemara Yebamot Daf Ayin Zayin. I'm just paraphrasing. You can open up and read it yourself. It's a good idea, Shavuot. You want to say the Vrei Torah, take the Yebamot to the table, read the whole story. Says Amasa ben Yeter took out a sword, started wielding it in the middle of the Beit Midrash, and he said, Rabotai, I have a tradition from Shemuel HaNavi and his court, and his court is still around, and they have a tradition all the way back from their rabbis, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, that when the Torah forbids Mo'avi, it's only the men, not the ladies. And anybody that wants to challenge me will be slain by this sword. Okay, the rabbi said, if you put it that way, okay, yeah, well, I can die for this. I'm not. Fine. That's the Gemara. So he came out with an ace out of his pocket. Oh, I got Shemuel and Avi on our side. And he has the tradition back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Ruth is kosher. Leave David alone. But there was controversy. Now, you know how they do it, lehavdil, chas v'shalom. I'm out of my mind for even bringing this example. But you know how sometimes in the movies, whoever knows what a movie is in this class, how they constantly go back from generation to generation, you know, different times in history. They show you the modern time, and they go back over, say, 200 years or 50 years, they show you what's going on. We're now in Shaul, David, that year. Let's flash back to Boaz, which is the grandfather of David, the great-grandfather of David. When Ruth became eligible to get married, there was a certain halakha that gave a man called Tov, his name, Mr. Tov, first rights. Ruth fell to a mitzvah called Yibum, actually. We're not going to confuse you with this. But she fell to the mitzvah of Yibum. Her husband died without children. And the custom in the old days was the closest family relative to the husband would fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum. That man was a man of Tov. His name was Tov. So Boaz, the rabbi of the generation, goes to Tov and says, listen, Mr. Tov, It's your mitzvah, Ruth Bechavod. You can marry her. It's a big mitzvah. Tov comes along and says, sorry, no dice. I don't want to ruin my lineage. I don't want to ruin my children. I'm out. Boaz says, well, it's okay. It's permissible. Pass. The rabbis don't talk so good about Mr. Tov. As a matter of fact, after his rejection, they don't even give him the courtesy by calling him by his name anymore. The Megillah calls him Peloni Almoni. Flan Flan. Meaning the guy turns into generic. The man turns into Mr. Anonymous. He doesn't even... The Gadol Ador is telling you to do the mitzvah, and you're worried about lineage? Would the Gadol Ador tell you to do something to ruin your lineage? Would he tell you to do something if it was wrong? Imagine a fellow goes to the rabbi. Rabbi, can I, is this gum kosher? 100% kosher. Can I eat it? 100% mutar. Would you eat it? Yes. I don't know. You mean more machmir? More machmir than the rabbi himself? Who? Rabbi, no name. Okay. Who is next in line to marry Ruth? Boaz. So it says Boaz went the next, immediately. He went and convened 10 rabbis together. And he reminded the 10 rabbis that Ruth is kosher, even though she's from Moabi. He reminded them of a law that says that the ladies are okay. He convened the court, the bet team, to make sure that Allah is clear. Why do you think Ploni Almoni rejected? Because he was holding like Doeg. You see, even then there was a controversy. The whole reason why Ploni Almoni abstained from marrying Ruth is I don't want to get involved with you. She's Moabiyah. I don't know, we're not allowed. I got a pasuk. Boaz was trying to say, no, you're making a mistake. It's permissible. But Ploni Almoni was hesitant. So you see the controversy that took place years later in the Bet Midrash with Doeg and Shaul was the same controversy that took place years earlier with Boaz and Tob. Tob, what was it? Now, we continue. Pay attention because this is a little deep. This is as deep as it's going to get tonight. This and that will coach again. It's a little trivial it's going to take place tonight. It's followed, it's a back point, it's a fine point if you could follow it. Avner, when he was having the conversation with Doeg, is it kosher or not, he came along and said, the rabbi said the ladies are kosher. Doeg wasn't impressed. Until Amasa comes along and says, I have a tradition from Samuel and Navi that has a tradition all the way back to Moshe. Then they accepted it. What was the matter with Avner? They both saying the same thing. One saying it from Samuel and one saying it from the rabbis. What's the difference? You got the little rule. In Torah, there are two ways to create Jewish law. Sometimes the Jewish law is created using one of the 13 principles, the 13 tools that we have to interpret the Torah. Our 13 different methods the rabbi gave us to use to interpret the law. That's one way. Another way is just tradition. A law that's been passed down from the church, rabbi to student, the rabbi to student, all the way down. What's the difference between the two methods of learning? They're most legitimate. The difference is, a law that's learned from the Hashanim using their logic can be overturned in a later generation by another court. If a different court sees it differently, they can say, what they said, that's not the law, they can overturn it. But something that said halakhalim or shem esinai can never be overturned. We are finished. Bottom line, over. Accept that one principle, then it's understood. Understand the difference? So what Avner was saying, Avner came over, the rabbi said, I'm also a rabbi, I overturned it. It doesn't matter. But once he came along, I'm not saying, said, oh, this is from Samuel, he had this tradition from Moshe on Sinai. I said, yeah, Moshe, now you understand the conversation between Boaz and Ploni Almoni. Ploni Almoni said, I can't marry you. You know why? I'm worried about my children. Why wasn't he worried about himself? What about his children? If Ruth is not legitimate, you can't marry her. What about your children? Ploni Almoni was saying like this, I agree, right now in our generation, the rabbis concur that Ruth is allowed. So I'm not worried about marrying Ruth. But I'm concerned that in the future generation this might be overturned. Another bestie might come along and say, ah, I was a mistake. So who's going to get ruined? My children. I'm worried about the future. Don't care about me. Who is kosher? He's only a kosher. Boaz, however, was saying, no. This is not rabbinic law. This is not a hell of a thing. This is a law that cannot be overturned. That was all my orchard. Very good. Now we start to understand, ladies and gentlemen, who anointed David to be the king? Which prophet? Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel HaNavi anointed David with concern that there was too much controversy regarding David. So he decided to write a book called Megillat Ruth, which is actually a book of approval from Shmuel HaNavi to state that David was kosher. The whole book of Ruth is for one purpose: to give us a success of kosher supervision that David is kosher. And who wrote the book? Shmuel HaNavi. Who heard from his rabbi, from his rabbi, the whole tradition was based on Shmuel's words. So the book of Ruth is very important to our religion. You see, in two generations there was controversy. Is he kosher? Is he kosher? Shmuel wanted to put this argument to rest. So he wrote to a rabbi, can I have an approval, rabbi, please, saying that I'm a good guy? Okay, you know the man, you know the father, the good people, whatever. Hashanah. There's a rabbi called Rav Shlomo El Kabet. Anybody hear of Rav Shlomo El Kabet? He wrote a famous song of Shlomo El Kabet. What is everybody drinking tonight? Does anybody know the song that Rav Shlomo El Kabet wrote? Chado D. Very good. Excellent. You redeemed everybody. Chado D. Rav Shlomo El Kabet also wrote a perush on Megillat Ruth. You know what the name of the perush is? Shoresh Yishai. Very important. The root of Yishai. It seems that there's somewhere that this also saw Megillat Ruth as a family tree giving us the shoresh of Yishai, the root of Yishai, the father of David. That's the purpose of the book. The purpose of the book is to tell us that David is kosher, Mashiach is kosher. It's controversial, but bottom line, it's okay. Now you understand why you read this book on Shavuot. Simple reason? That David died on Shavuot. You can add on 10 o'clock at night to hear that interest. If you could get anywhere, by the way. If they teach you in second grade, David died on Shavuot, that's the reason you got me. So we always like to go a little extra in this way. A little extra mile to give you a little depth that you might not get anywhere. And here's the depth that we offer you tonight. Why is the book of Ruth is not on Shavuot? Follow me. Shavuot, we received the Torah. How many Torahs did we receive at Sinai? Two. Torah to the Shab, the written law, and Torah to Ba'al-Peh, the oral law. You have to know that. Somebody asked in the streets, how many Torahs are there? Your answer must be two. Not tablets. Your answer must be tablets. Your answer is easy. And God forbid, Halilah Be'ahash, we're not talking New Testament either. Not the Shalom. But none. We're talking over two Torahs. The written law is the five books. The Mishis, the Lord, the Iqlab, the Midbar, the Barim. Five books are called the Chumash. The written law is given over. But also the volumes of Tash, of Gemara, of Mishnah, are also given over. As a matter of fact, which of the two are more important? Undoubtedly, the Rashi Ma'al-Peh, the oral law. Because without the Rashi Ma'al-Peh, the Rashi Bichtav has no meaning. The Rashi Bichtav tells every man must place on his head Tosafot. Anybody know what Tosafot are? The African word, in the Gemara says. Tat, what does it mean? We understand that to mean 50 feet. We understand that to mean a black box with four compartments, with parashiyot, with straps. But the Torah says all that in one word, so that was the way we know all the details of that word. Torah Shema Al-Peh. Without Torah Shema Al-Peh, you have no idea what this means. Another example, cookies. Torah tells us on Sukkot to take a lulav. Yes, we know what a lulav is. But also says you have to take a fruit. A peri. Et hadash. Beautiful fruit. Very very. One fellow might go to the store and say, beautiful fruit. Take a nice mango. Another one, a guava. Another person might want to be mahmoud. Take a watermelon. What? Et hadash. Why not? Torah says, fruit. So what do we all take on Sukkot? A throne. Who said a throne? Where do you know a throne from? So I don't say a throne. There's no food to a throne. Yamara. Harassment out there. So without all the law, Akhenah is really an inexplicable person. So that's what they see. So while celebrating the holiday of Shavuot, you must keep in mind you're not only celebrating the fact that we read the Torah and Shabbat in synagogue, we're not only celebrating the written book, but it's actually a celebration of Gemara. It's a celebration of that most important interpretation of the Rashi Ma'aseh. Now ask the beautiful. Ask how beautiful. If indeed Shavuot is a celebration of these two Torahs, what better book to read to prove that point and to propound that point than the Megillat Ruth? Think about it. You read the Megillat Ruth, you see Boaz married Ruth. You say, oh, it says in the Torah, lo yavo hamoni u'moavi, what is Boaz doing? How did Boaz marry Ruth? Haram, the Torah said clearly, black and white. Huh? You only read the rest of the staff. But if you open up,
they tell you that it's kosher when it says Moavi, it's only the men, not the ladies. Something you're not going to get from the text. According to the text, Boaz is wrong. According to the text, David's illegitimate. According to the text, Mashiach is gone. Who koshered David? The rabbis.
Rashi Baal Peh.
Based on tradition. Oral law handed down from rabbi to student all the way back from Moshe Rabbeinu. David HaMelech is only kosher because Torah Shema Al Peh. You understand how beautiful? This is phenomenal. This goes down as one of the most exciting Hiddushim that have been said in Wednesday night history. That's exciting, which I tell you. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm excited about this Hiddush. I think it's a tremendous idea. And that's why we read Megillat Ruth. Megillat Ruth is a lesson in the importance of Gemara study. It's an importance, a lesson in the importance of the study of Mishnayot and Torah Shebaal Peh, which is the essence of our religion, which is it's the interpretation of our religion. Our religion has no sense without Gemara. All those purists, they're just like to study Bible. They have no idea what the Bible means unless they open up the commentary of Torah Shebaal Peh. Without Torah Shebaal Peh, our greatest king is illegitimate. Without Torah Shebaal Peh, King Solomon is illegitimate. Mashiach is illegitimate. So Megillat Ruth is a study of the greatness of Gemara, of Hakamim, and their interpretation. I'm not going to confuse you with Dirashot, but there's a nice Dirashah here. For all those that like Dirashot, you like this one. The Gaon Mevilna said, David HaMelech said in Tehillim, Tsarim redafuni hinam, umidebarecha pahad libi. Sas anochi al imratecha, Kemotze shalal rav. David HaMelech says, Sarim ledafuni hainam, the princes were pursuing me. Who were these princes? Doeg, Shaul. They were pursuing me. They were discussing me in the Bet Midrash. They wanted to announce that I was illegitimate. Umidebarecha pachad libi. And from your words in the Torah, I got scared, because it does say in the Torah, lo yavo hamoni u'moavi. They were pursuing me, and I was scared that they were right. From your words, I was scared. However, Sas Anochi al Imratecha. But I rejoiced on your words in Torah Shabbat Peh. Kemotzeh Shalav Lav, like I found a great treasure. Because it was Torah Shabbat Peh, the testimony of Shemuel, that saved me. David accredits his whole legitimacy to Ma'amar Hazal, the statements of the Hakamim of Shas. If that's true, what we're saying here tonight, we might say one more hadush here. Why is Shavuot the only holiday that the Torah does not tell us a specific date to celebrate it? Think about it. Rosh Hashanah, Torah tells us on 1 Tishri. Kippur, the Torah tells us on the 10th of Tishri. Sukkot, on the 15th of Tishri. Pesach, on the 15th of Nisan. Nowhere in the Torah does it say, on the 6th of Sivan shall you celebrate Shavuot. It's strange. I mean, it's one of the three holidays. Deserves its own date. But instead the Torah gives it to us in such a roundabout way. The Torah tells us 49 days after Mahorat HaShabbat, whatever that is Shavuot. Usfartem lachem Mahorat HaShabbat, you should count from the day after Shabbat 49 days and you have Shavuot. What is the day after Shabbat? Sunday. Very good. Brilliant. Brilliant. You said good. Actually, that's exactly what the Siddukim also said. Siddukim came along and said, Shabbat is Shabbat, day after Shabbat is Sunday. They came along with their very literal interpretations of the Torah and said that you don't start counting the Omer until the day after Shabbat, meaning Sunday, the Sunday following Pesach, that's when you start the Omer. If Pesach is on Tuesday, you start the Omer 5 days later on Sunday. And 49 days after that Sunday, 50th day Shavuot. That's what Siddukim said. So they always were celebrating Shavuot on a different day. Rabbis came along and said, mistake, Siddukim. When it says Mimachorat HaShabbat, Shabbat and that pasuk is not the regular Shabbat. It's not the Shabbat of the week. It's referring to Pesach. Yom Tov Shel Pesach. The holiday of Pesach is also called the Shabbat. Holidays are also called Shabbat. In the Torah you have two types of Shabbat. You have the weekly Shabbat and the festivals that are also called Shabbat. So when it says Mimachorat HaShabbat, it means the day after the first day of Pesach. The first day of Pesach comes out on a Tuesday. Wednesday you start counting Omer. The day after the Mahorat the Shabbat. What a giant argument between Hakamim and the Tzedukim. Rabotai. We celebrate Shavuot on the sixth day of Sivan based on what? Based on the interpretation of Torah Shabbat. According to the Torah, we have no idea when Shavuot is. If it was not for the fact that the Gemara came along and explained to us what Mahorat the Shabbat was, you have no holiday. You don't know when to celebrate. You don't know when to start counting. The Torah specifically left that out to show you the importance of Hazal. Again, the holiday of Shavuot stressing the importance of Gemara, of oral law. The whole date is based on oral law. Has no source from the Torah. And I think that's the message of the holiday. What we're saying tonight here, Be'ezat Hashem, is correct. And is emet. then the lesson of Shavuot, specifically to the men, and indirectly to the ladies, is a commitment and a recommitment and a rededication to the study of Shas, to the study of Gemara. It is not acceptable as Torah Jews that we aspire to be, not to be involved in the study of Gemara. As Jews, it is not sufficient to attend Bible class or to attend Navi class or to attend Jewish history class. As Jews, we must reach the essence of our religion and study it from its sources, and its sources are only Torah Shebaal Peh Gemara. The holiday of Shavuot is a time to commit ourselves to that study, to that area of the religion which is the most important part of religion. Every man must be involved. I don't exaggerate, on a daily basis, in swimming in Yam HaTalmud, the ocean of the Talmud, analyzing its laws, reading the commentary, in order to know exactly what Borei Olam wants from us. It's not enough to take out a Sansino Chumash and confuse ourselves with King James English and not understand what God wants. It's not enough to even pull out a modern day version of the Bible without delving into its sources in Shas. That's the lesson of Shavuot. You must learn Gemara. That's the meat of our religion. And when we say Gemara, it means also Halakha. Because it is from Gemara where all our Halakot are brought out of it. Men must be involved, and ladies, certainly, must be involved in the study of Halakha. There's a big claim that our community does not provide enough Halakha classes. Yes, there are tapes on Parashat HaShavua, on Musar. But what is Musar all about? Musar is to inspire us. To what? To go to another Musar class? And then what is that Musar class to inspire us? To go to yet a third Musar class? Eventually the Musar is supposed to inspire us to something more than Musar. It's supposed to inspire us to learn laws. To learn Halakha. To know what God wants. It's no doubt that there should be much more halakha classes being taught in our community. Be it Hilchot Shabbat, be it Hilchot Yom Tov, Hilchot Kashrut. As of now, we're studying with some gentlemen laws that we should never know, we should never follow, but the laws of Avilut, God forbid, the laws of mourning, which encompass a large section of the Shulchan Aruch. How are you going to know if you don't open up a Gemara that tells you what to do and what not to do, and open up a Halakha, and open up... You should see us in the mornings. We start off with one book on the table, and then bring another book. Bring us a Shulchan Aruch, bring us a Beit Yosef, bring us a modern day. Ends up with 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 books on the table, just to get one simple Halakha. But that's how religion is all about, the Rabotai. The study of Torah. Actually, life without learning Torah is not life. Torah is not merely an ingredient of life. It is life itself. Torah is not merely salt. Because you can eat without salt, but you can't live without Torah. Torah is not an ingredient. What is he talking about? What does he mean, Torah's life? We're made up of a physical part and a spiritual part. That spiritual part of us can only be sustained through a spiritual means, and the highest spiritual means is learning. Otherwise, If we do not tend to our spiritual needs, we are no worse than an animal. We are no better than an aardvark or a yak in the jungle. They're physical. They have no spiritual. A Jew must be in the Beit Midrash stunning, feeding and giving nutrients to his soul. Our rabbis teach us there is no greater mitzvah than the study of Torah. That means if you would ask God at this moment, God, please, I want to serve you on the highest level. Tell me something that I could do in order to make you the most happy and to attain the most reward. Tell me something I could do. And you know what he'd answer you? You're doing it. Sit in the class, don't move. Not an exaggeration. There is nothing that you could be doing right now with your lives better than what you're doing right now. Bikur Holim! No. Charity! No. Nothing! Take my words to the bank. Repeat my words outside in the street. It's not my words. Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. This is not an exaggeration. There is no greater mitzvah than the study of Torah. And I'll prove it to you. Every word of Torah that is said is a mitzvah. For that matter, every word that you listen to is a mitzvah. Make a calculation. In 1 minute, we could probably say 200 words. In 15 minutes, 3,000 words. And in an hour, 12,000 words. Imagine that. You sit here for an hour, and you're walking out with 12,000 mitzvot. Go visit the sick. It's a great mitzvah. Get one. It's a big one, but it's one. Every second of Torah is a mitzvah, and every hour is 12,000. That's minimum. You get a rabbi that talks fast? It's much better. You get much more for your money. Think about it. Think about what it means to take advantage of these moments. How much wasted time. You know, as businessmen, your time is limited. In the office from 9 to 5, you cannot commit yourself to many hours of the study of Torah. And I think the time of Shavuot is a time to take advantage even of a few minutes here and there where you can grab hundreds of mitzvot. Imagine if every day in your commute you would take a tape of Torah with you. 1 hour tape. You leave your car with 12,000 mitzvot. And you take a tape for the way back without doing anything. You're 24,000 mitzvot richer. Imagine that. As opposed to listening to the radio or wasting your time. Certainly you're not going to gain mitzvot. We hope you wouldn't end up in negative territory as a result of that behavior. In the yeshiva of Kelum, they had an interesting custom. In Kelum, what they would do was, giving an example, I don't know the exact time they did it, but let's say at 2 o'clock, all the yeshiva men would come back from their dormitory and come into the Beit Midrash, and they'd have a session of learning from 2 to 2.05. After 5 minutes, they close the book and they'll walk out again. And somebody asks, well, what purpose? You turn over the whole world for 5 minutes? Imagine having a class, a period for 5 minutes. Look, what could you accomplish in 5 minutes? And the rabbi said, that's exactly what we're trying to teach the children, the boys. It's worth it. For 5 minutes to open a book and learn and then close the book. The problem is we don't treat 5 minutes as importance. But if you were told to go into the vault of Chase Manhattan Bank for 5 minutes. What are you going to tell us? 5 minutes. Fine, we're going to do 5 minutes. In 5 minutes, you can make a lot of money in 5 minutes. And therefore, yes, we have to learn how to take advantage of our time, Rabotai. All of us should go to a bookstore, ladies included. Buy a Chumash in English with Perush Rashi, buy a Gemara off scroll, buy whatever you understand, and keep it pocket size in your attaché case. That book is like an ATM card. It has the accessibility to so much mitzvot. You're standing online in the bank. One of the most wasted exercises in humanity. Standing online in a bank. And you're watching all morons just standing aimlessly, doing nothing. Just waiting, standing around. How many times can you count your deposit? And they're looking at the numbers, 3, 6, that which teller's gonna be yours, you're figuring, you're making cash flow, no, for what purpose? Where does it get you? 10 minutes waiting online in the bank. Don't be embarrassed, you have your attention, take out your Gemara, take out a Mishnah. 5 minutes, you read the Mishnah, you gain mitzvah, you took advantage. You connect yourself with life again. And don't be embarrassed. Nothing to be embarrassed of opening up a Gemara in the middle of line in the bank. The Abed that's moonwalking online is not embarrassed. The guy that's dancing online is not embarrassed. So why are you embarrassed? What do you care? They're all crazy. You open up a book also. You read Gemara, you read a Mishnah, nothing to be ashamed of. I wouldn't be ashamed. On Fifth Avenue, if there was $100 bills on the floor, I'd be crawling to collect $100 bills. Let them laugh. And if there was a wad of bills in a sewer, you'd crawl down to get it. Are you ashamed? Now shut them laugh. Because it's value. The same thing in Torah. You have to take advantage of those times. A man, while he's waiting for his wife to get dressed or put on her makeup, what an opportunity. What an opportunity. When your wife says 1 minute, this could be a page of Gemara. This could be value time. You open up, you read. Instead of getting yourself worked up, instead of yourself getting nervous, for what purpose? You're able to study. Gentlemen, ladies, Shavuot is really a time to recommit ourselves to these principles of learning Torah, not only in the class. If Torah is your life, it has to be your life outside the class also. Outside the classroom, Torah is part of you. That means every free moment you have, you should be learning something. Every free moment you have, another Hiddush, another Halakha, another Rashi, another Mishnah. And slowly, slowly, you start to see you're finishing books. You're finishing chapters. You're finishing sections. And you'll start to wonder, oh yeah, I read that already. I studied that. Where did I study that? I wasn't in class. Oh yeah, that was over here. That was in the thing. I was waiting online. That was waiting over here. Take advantage of all these moments. But specifically to the men, Shavuot is a holiday to recommit ourselves to Torah Sheba'al Peh. Ladies, we must be the enforcement and the support, the moral support to our husbands in order to push them in that direction. Certainly not everybody is a morning person. There are classes at night. Baruch Hashem, we live in a holy city. And I say that with all seriousness. Brooklyn, Baruch Hashem, there's many classes, there's many bookstores, there's many availabilities to connect yourself with life. And therefore, there's no excuse. In Tennessee, they might have an excuse. In Atlanta, they might have an excuse. But in Brooklyn, New York, there is no excuse. Let's not waste the holiday. Most people celebrate our holidays based on the menu. Shavuot is Kalsones holiday. This is a very immature way of looking at a holiday, just based on menu. Of course, a holiday must take on spiritual significance. And the spiritual significance of Shavuot is you gotta learn. You have to learn. You have to open up the books. You have to read Gemara. You have to read Halakha. And Be'ezat Hashem, if that's the case, then the holiday is not wasted, and the message is taken. Then you took the message of Megillat Rut. We only have a Davidic dynasty because we have a Gemara. We only have a holiday of Shavuot on the 6th of Sivan because we have a Gemara. It's only two. But as you frequent yourself in the study of Gemara, you realize there are hundreds of laws out there that we never knew before. Yirason, that we should become rededicated and remotivated to this most important aspect of our religion. The life-sustaining aspect